Schooling is one of the few experiences majority of Americans share. Yet how much do we really know what goes on behind the scene? And what's up with cafeteria lunches? I team up with developmental psychologist David Yeager to explore the personal side of education by speaking with superintendents. I'm Andrew Kim, and I consider myself an accidental superintendent for the past 15 years. So grab your lunch money and welcome to Lunch Duty. I have here with me a very special guest. His name is Dr. Ron Kalos. He is my mentor. I think I've known you about close to 30 years now.
Yes, sir.
Now, what are you doing right now?
Retired. Fully retired.
Hey, now, how long have you been a superintendent now?
I was one 24 years.
24 years. And you know, I'm looking at your background there, your nice bookcase, and I don't see a picture of me.
I don't know why that didn't happen.
I know. I got to get you a picture. We have a picture of, you know, of us together.
Yeah, I know, but you got hair. I don't have hair. Hell.
Now, did you had hair when you began the superintendency back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Little thinner than yours, but I had some.
It was jet black, wasn't it, too?
Jet black.
Now, you didn't grow up wanting to be a superintendent when you were a little kid, did you?
No. I had no idea who the superintendent was.
What did you want it to be when you were thinking about your future?
Well, I wanted to be successful. You know, I don't know that it was actually an education, but I had ideas of, you know, running a company, running a business, having my own business, you know, something where I could make some money.
Well, you went to the Navy after high school.
17 years old, I joined the Navy. Graduated from high school at 17, joined the Navy. Got out at 20, right at 20.
And did you go straight into teaching after that, or what did you do?
I went to school, moved to San Antonio.
And you went to school?
Yes, sir. I went to San Antonio Junior College. I graduated from high school in Florida.
That's right.
I got out of high school, went in the Navy, got out of the Navy, moved to Dallas, the Dallas area. Went to college here. Graduated from St. Mary's.
And were you thinking about education at that time, or were you thinking about the business world?
I started teaching. Yeah.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
You liked it? Did you like teaching, or did you think that this
yeah,
was...
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah. It was all right. It was good.
It was all right.
I liked it. Became a principal pretty young. I think I was in the classroom 7 years.
Well, how did that come about? How did you go into... who nudged you, or who asked you to go become an administrator? Or did you just
do it on your... Well, I looked at the salaries and I said, God, if you want to make a living in this profession, you got to become an administrator. You know, I got married, had one or two kids, I had three kids all together. But I said, damn, if I'm going to stay in this, I better become a school administrator.
So you decided, you know what, I'm going to stay in education, but I'm going to go into administration.
Well, I wanted to get into administration to make enough money, but I hadn't totally decided that administration was going to be my gig.
Yeah. How'd you know that?
I was pretty successful in a hurry. Became a superintendent 7 years, and I was a superintendent 24 years.
Now, did they just, now you moved up pretty quickly being a superintendent because you also moved around a lot too, though.
I started in Bandera, went from Bandera to San Antonio, Southeast School District, went from San Antonio to Lamar Consolidated in Houston.
Yep.
I was superintendent in Southeastern, went to San Antonio to Lamar Consolidated.
You did. You started out in Kings Ranch, though.
I started in Rivera.
Yeah.
Then I went from Rivera as superintendent to Southeastern in San Antonio. Then I went from San Antonio to Houston.
That's right.
And I was at Lamar Consolidated in Houston, and I went from Houston to Dallas.
to where you wind up retiring from the Hearst Euless Befford.
Yeah. I was there at my last 8-9 years. Yeah.
And then, of course, I met you when I was a young assistant principal at North Dallas High School in Dallas ISD. And you were a professor teaching at the University of Texas at Arlington.
Yeah.
I was...
I saw you right away and I knew I liked you.
Well, I was your best student, right?
You smiled at me. I put you on the front seat in the front row and you smiled at me. And I said, this guy's got to be okay.
Well, you needed somebody to laugh at your jokes every day. So, you know, every time we had class. So I think that was my job.
That was your job.
So at Rivera ISD, tell me about that experience. You know,
well, I got to, it's a small rural district, Rivera Independent School District, just south of Kingsville.
Yeah.
I was there as a teacher. They moved me into high school principal for 2 years and then to the superintendency.
That's the board. The board made those decisions.
Yes, sir. They make all of them.
Yeah, that's
true. When it comes to hiring administrators, you know, they have the last say.
They do. You're right about that. Now, did you have other staff that you started working with, or were you doing it all by yourself in a small school district like that?
Well, in a small district, you don't have any assistants.
Yeah.
So I had a high school principal, a middle school principal, an elementary principal, you know, and I did okay.
Well, you
good
moved up
community.
Quickly. Yeah, you moved up quickly from there, and you got.
I was a superintendent at 29, I think.
Or were you?
Yeah, 29.
Well, you started moving pretty fast up into larger districts, and you got more people. And how was that working with more people, starting out from Rivera ISD? You recall that? What was it like to have more people around you and working with more people, especially a central office?
Yeah, it's just. The job changes, of course. You get more help. You know, when I was at Hearst Euless Befford, I had a couple of assistant superintendents. You know, the high school had principals, assistant principals, and so forth. And so you get more help in the bigger districts. The job is probably a little more intense in the small districts because you do it all.
Yeah.
You know, an appeal goes directly to you from principal. It comes right to you.
Yeah.
And in the bigger systems, you have assistants that handle stuff. And if they can't weed it out, then you have to take care of it. I had good assistants.
Well, I want to talk to you about that. And but also kind of want to talk to you about this straight line in a small school district. Which one did you prefer? You know, small school district where they can come directly to you and you solve it?
I prefer the larger districts.
You did?
Yes. There was more help. I got to do more planning, work more on a master plan. But I learned the business in a small district. I learned how to handle people.
Well, that's an interesting comment. So in a small school district, because you were obviously interacting with a lot of folks, what are some of the things you think that you took away as a lesson learned at Rivera or Bandera ISD, and then as you moved out to the larger district?
Well, you learn every day, Andrew. You know, every incident you have, you make mistakes, you do things right. You learn from those mistakes. You set a pattern on how to handle people. You know how to, you know, listen more than you speak.
Yep.
But when you speak, nail it. Come in with some savvy stuff and get it on the line.
How did you acquire some of those savvy comments for you?
I think you acquire that by doing it, going through the actions with different people. You know, you have the parent that thinks the system is against them, that the system doesn't care about their kid, that they just want to wipe their kid out. then you have the parent that threatens you with attorneys, and you know, they're all different types of people. And as a superintendent, you got to learn how to soft pedal these people. In other words, try to get your message across to them in a stern manner that doesn't turn them completely upside down. And it's not always easy. You know, it's a challenge.
Well, what kind of person you think, personality did you have that suited you for that? I mean, you know, because sometimes you kind of bark orders at me sometimes, you know. You know, you got to be patient.
You can do that. You can do that with your personnel in closed doors. But now when you're in with parents, you got to handle it a little differently. You can be stern. You can be direct. But you just have to approach the incident in a much more diplomatic method, that you're not going to give ground, that you're going to administer the right thing to the child, not be unfair, and not try to wipe the kid out.
Yeah. Now, you know, I learned these things by listening to you a lot over all these years. And where do you think you gained these knowledge from? I mean, was there mentors that you had, or?
I learned from some pretty good people. Yeah, I worked for a couple of good superintendents, and I learned some things from them and how they handle people. And you know, you get a system down to where your secretary helps. Hey, let me, Dr. Kalos, let me tell you what this gentleman's like. He's very irritable. He'll come at you right away. You know, you get these tips from them, and you weigh that. When you go into the conference with them, you kind of expect how to react to this guy, you know?
Yeah.
Some you got to be very, very forceful with. Others you say, hey, look, I'm not opposed to your child. What your child did was wrong.
Yeah.
And he's got to pay the consequences for it.
You think that the ability to have good relationships or to understand diplomatically way of dealing with people, it doesn't come naturally to people, I don't think.
No, it does not come naturally. You learn by experience, handling personnel yourself, handling parents, you know, handling teachers who are excitable and get upset. You learn, it's a process that you learn through just going through it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, is there not a preparation program then, a book? I mean, what were you always leaning on when you had to make those tough decisions?
I knew a couple of superintendents that I relied on quite a bit. Very experienced, very, very good, yes. But you got to watch who you contact with that. You know, you got all kinds of personalities out there. You got superintendents that are just irate all the time. You got superintendents that are mild all the time. You got all different sizes, shapes, and you got to pick what you want to be and find the person you think you want to be. And be honest. When you deal with parents, always be honest.
Yeah.
Say,
yeah.
Hey, look, you know, I know you're upset, and I realize you have a reason to be upset.
Yeah.
But you need to be upset at that young man some, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, now, you know, business telling that teacher that.
Yeah. What do you say to young
people? I don't know that he did that. Let me tell you something. I feel pretty sure he did, or I wouldn't be here right now.
That's a great line.
Yeah.
You know,
but you got to have the person that you got to fit your personality. You know, you don't want to be a renegade, an overbearing tyrant. You don't want to be a soft push either.
Yeah.
You know that. You've been there.
Yeah, I have. You know, I think I try to take as much of a lesson from you and listening to you talk about these experiences. And, you know, I think I relied on that on a day-to-day basis, I think, on the job. Not to say that I did it right all the time, But
none of us do. Hey, I made my mistakes. Don't misunderstand me. I wasn't pure and clean. But as you get more experience, the better perfection you have.
Yeah. You know, the job hasn't changed much, but it's also changed a lot, if that makes sense. How do you think the job has changed a lot today? You know, I know it's been a while since you've been in the seat, but how do you look at the job today?
I think things have changed. Absolutely. They've changed since I've gotten out of the business. I mean, schools are not the same as they were when I was in it.
Yeah.
Personnel have changed. Parents have changed. I think that today you see more parents that feel like they know the system.
Yeah.
Even though they don't.
Yeah.
You know, that they're in more control over what happens with their child. They're in control of how their child acts most of the time.
Yeah.
But they're not in control of how the system reacts to what the child does.
Yeah.
You know, you have school boards that write policies. You have administrators that administrate those policies.
Yeah.
And some of those people differ.
Yeah.
You know, you go to one high school and they're doing one thing, and you go to another one of your high schools and they're doing something else.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
You know, one of them is putting every kid that has a weapon in suspension.
Yep.
And the other school is, hey, don't bring that to school anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's there is definitely a differences depending on where you go. Even certainly it's more visible like that in our state because it's so big, and there's such a regional aspect of it, no doubt.
Absolutely.
Now, what do you miss? What do you miss about the superintendency? Can you say something like that? I know you miss the people.
Yeah, I miss the relationships I had with staff members, fellow superintendents, assistant superintendents, fellow superintendents, and the building level superintendents that I had. You know, you miss those friendships, and you miss a lot of the people that you knew. Yeah, we had some outstanding teachers.
Yeah.
Good people.
You have.
I think school people are a brand of their own. We have our downbeats. We have those that shouldn't be in the business, no doubt about it.
Yep.
But I would say 85-90% of them are true blue people.
Yep.
True good people. You know? And they want to do good. They want to produce. They want kids to learn, and that's hard to beat.
That is. Well, what do you miss about it? I mean, what do you not miss about the superintendency? I should say it that way. What do you miss about it?
There are a lot of things. There are certain things you never miss. You know, the appeals that you get, the parents that are upset. You know, you try to point some things out to them. And you get them one-on-one without the kid, and they're usually pretty good then.
Yeah.
But then they get the kid in the room and they lose it. You know? Not always. I'm not saying that. We got great parents out there, predominantly speaking.
Yep.
Now we have our downbeats.
Sure.
You know, I miss the relationship with parents and fellow administrators and teachers, kids, though when you become a superintendent, I always had student advisory committees, you know.
Yeah.
But it's never at the extent of when you were a building principal, and I was that for a while.
Yeah.
Not long, but I miss those relationships because I met some unbelievably good people.
Yeah. You're a people person for sure. I have known you to be someone who engages and talk with people all the time. And, you know, when you decided to, retire, that must have been somewhat of a hard transition, no?
Oh, yeah, it was. I mean, my first 4 or 5 years were tough. You know, I miss people. I miss being around them, the contacts, the meetings, and everything. I missed it all. But after I got used to it and got away from it a while, I said, hey, this is the place to be.
Yeah.
You know, my best year gone.
Yeah. Well, don't say that. Now, did you miss making tough decisions, or did you like to be in the fire making those tough decisions?
I didn't mind making the decisions. All right. I tried to do as much as I could to get all the information I could to make those decisions, but I didn't miss making those decisions. Did I make mistakes sometimes? Yes.
Yeah.
And when you make enough of them, you're going to make some mistakes. And I made some. But you learn through every instance you go through. You know, whether it be a student, whether it be a teacher, a parent, whatever it might be, you learn something every time. How you should have reacted, how you could have replied, you know? And as I grew and as I got more experienced, I think I used that quite a bit, and it helped me.
Yeah. You've certainly have given me a lifelong's worth of advice about not just being a superintendent, but just being a good person. Certainly, I hope that I've done half the stuff that you try to impart with me. But there was a great advice that you gave me about, because I asked you a question. Hey, when do I know I need to step away from the job? Do you remember your answer to that by any chance?
Well, it could have been one of several. I mean, I think you weigh that after you were in it a while and you start seeing the pressures that a superintendent's under, and you understand, hey, you know, I'm not going to satisfy every board member I work for totally.
Yep.
I need to satisfy a majority of them or I won't be around.
Yep.
But you realize, hey, you know, this is a business. People are not going to always like what you do, especially those that you're punishing in a way, you know. They're not going to like it, and you can't expect them to like it.
No.
You can expect them to go along with it.
Yeah.
And say, okay, I need to pay my dues.
Yeah.
But, I the job is tough. It's a gut check. It was a gut check when I was in it, and I think it's tougher now.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's tougher every year. It's not easy.
No.
And not everybody's cut out to be a superintendent.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain personalities are very fine in school people, administrators.
Yeah.
Very fine that are not superintendent material.
Yeah.
You know, they're good high school principals or good middle school principals, but they're not cut out to handle those 7, 9 board members that you have.
Yep.
With all different ideas. You sit down with a policy sometimes and you have 7 people.
Yeah.
That feel the policy ought to be different in 7 different ways.
That's
right. Impossible.
Yep.
You know, we got to say, what's best for our children? What's best for the system?
Yep. You told me, just to answer that question that I recall about when you should step away, you pulled me aside and you said, when little things starts bothering you.
Little things bother you, yeah.
Yeah, then it probably is a good sign that you should probably either move on or let go.
Or start thinking about it.
Yeah.
Now, you spent how many years in Comal?
Oh, I was there 10 years and then another 5.
That's a long time for a superintendent.
Sure.
10 years as a superintendent in a district that size is a long time.
Well, I was lucky.
In 10 years, you're going to make enough people upset.
Sure.
To where they're going to say, God, do we have the right guy here?
Well, I got lucky there. I appreciate you saying that. And I think, you visited me quite a bit to make sure that,
I ran a fine system. You were a good superintendent, Andrew.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, especially coming from you.
You handled things well. I mean, there were a lot of things that I think people looked to you and respected what you did.
Well, I try to copy everything that you've done.
But you were your own man.
Now, the one thing I couldn't copy was that you always were a sharp-dressed guy, better than I could ever be. Always wearing...
Like him now?
Well, you're wearing some comfy clothes right now.
I dressed all right. Yes, sir.
Now,
nice.
You have always. Now, you have paid it forward many times over. I know many other guys and gals that owe a huge debt to you for being there for them. But your own son, Scott, is a superintendent.
Correct.
Now, how do you feel about that? You feel good and proud?
I'm proud of him. I think he's doing a good job. I don't live there. I don't make the policies or have anything to do with them. But from what he tells me, I think he's doing all right. He hasn't been fired yet, so I guess he's hanging in there. He's a good guy. He's a good kid.
He's a great guy. He's a great guy. A little bit taller than you, but he's a great guy. Definitely.
God,
I
hope he's taller than me.
So, were you always looking for one of your kids to become a superintendent? Is that something that you wanted them to go or what?
Well, my other son's a surgeon.
Yep.
Medical doctor.
Yep.
He's a DDS and an MD. He's an oral maxillofacial surgeon. Very bright kid.
Yeah.
And two good boys. I have a good daughter.
Yep.
All three of them graduated from UT in Austin.
Yep.
They went to good schools. They applied themselves. But, I think you get a kid to school, you get them a degree, and you say, hey, do what you got to do.
Yep.
Do what you feel best with.
And did you encourage Scott to go into the superintendency or education, or were you just let him make that decision?
He made that decision. I don't think I encouraged him, no. I mean, he came to me and asked me some questions once in a while, and I gave him the superintendency's tough. It's not cut for everybody. You'll know when you get in it whether you want to stay in it or not.
Well, like you said, the job was emotionally tough. You've always said that.
And very, very tough. You're dealing with the staff. You're dealing with teachers. You're dealing with principals, You're dealing with students. You're dealing with parents. You've got all those elements you've got to tie together into the system.
I didn't sleep well sometimes. Did you sleep well during your superintendency?
Not all the time.
Well, I didn't sleep after board meetings. I stayed up all night after school board meetings.
Did you enjoy the rest of the evening?
No, I stayed up watching reruns of SportsCenter. I think part of that was, board meetings can be very intense, and it takes a lot of adrenaline to handle that meeting. And so I think it took a long time to sort of come down off of that. And, I think it was hard to sleep as a result of that.
Yeah, I was usually done about 2 o'clock in the afternoon the next day.
Is that right?
I mean, my brain was just washed. I don't know that it's that big anyway, but I mean, I was hammered.
Yeah.
I'd go home 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon and go to bed.
Yeah. You were tired.
Shower and go to bed. Yeah. I didn't sleep much after a board meeting.
Now, did you do anything as a hobby? I mean, you have always encouraged me to get a hobby, but I don't have one, and I don't know if you have one.
You're exactly right. I didn't have one. I worked out, weighed some, and jogged and ran and took care of myself pretty good physically, but I didn't have any real hobbies or anything I could go to. I just worked.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I busted my buns every day and night. And it, you know, the job is so intense.
Yeah.
You got something on your plate every night. You got this, you got that.
There was something, somewhere to be for the community and for the kids every night and every, and Saturday mornings too, by the way, cross country run.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I know
you got activities on Saturday. You got things at the track and you've got, you know, you got everything. You did just, it's a continuous job.
I know. I know a couple of my board members would always want me to be at that cross country meet on Saturday mornings. And it was hard sometimes, hard to be there.
Yeah.
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 Awful.
That's a wonder they didn't give you a suit, make you suit up and run.
They should have, though, because that probably would have given me a better way of keeping my health up a little bit. You know, like you, I didn't, because I didn't have much of a hobby, and I still don't have a hobby. And so I worry about that sometimes.
And, you know, Andrew, that's a great point. That's the same point I had my whole career. Get something you like to do. Fish, hunt. I'd go hunting a time or two, and then it just... I never got anything that I got into. Play softball. Do something.
Yeah.
I do. You think know, and I never. Very important.
Yeah.
It gets your mind relaxed.
Yeah. I do think it's a very important thing. I don't think that people know what type of mental processing you're doing constantly as a result of the job.
Well, you know, that's true.
I mean, you're thinking about the job. You're thinking about everything all the time. I don't think there's a moment that you just stop not thinking about it.
Sure. It's a continuous cycle.
Yeah.
I mean, it just evolves daily. Problems come up daily. Minor problems. Major problems. Major problems develop into appeals, board meetings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's hard to get your, and the bigger the system, the more you have of it. Now, the more people you have working on it, guaranteed. But when you've got 25,000 kids and, you know, you're a pretty good sized district and you got some problems.
Yeah. I want to ask you about, you know, this podcast is called Lunch Duty because.
Mm-hmm. Lunch Duty?
Yeah, Lunch Duty.
Oh, and, all right.
I came up with that because I think all good administrators, or really all teachers for that matter, we've all done lunch duty sometime in our career.
Yeah. Yes,
you know,
sir.
You recall a lunch duty that you either enjoyed or hated in your career?
Well, I can think of several of them, sure. I mean, you know, telling kids to quit messing around and sit down and eat. And, you know, you have those challenges every day. Kids dropping their plates, food going all over the floor. Yeah, it's, you know, you're dealing with kids and you're going to have those kind of problems.
I would have loved to seen you doing lunch duty. Maybe I can meet you at a school district somewhere and let you kind of do that a little bit. So I can see your technique.
I don't know if I have any more techniques.
I know that I've taken up a good portion of your evening time here, but if you had to give some advice to another young superintendent coming up the ranks, you know, what would that be?
I would say be patient, be direct, listen. Listen to your staff, listen to your course, listen to your board. When you agree with people, you tell them. When you don't, you tell them.
Mm.
In a good fashion way. Look, I understand what you're saying, but I don't agree with that. Here's why. It could lead to that, this, that. But you've got to try your shoes on, and you got to see what shoes fit and which ones don't.
Yeah.
You know, and go from there. And if you have good intentions, if you're truthful, the truth is very important. When you've made a mistake, say it. Look, I dropped the ball. Hopefully that won't happen again.
Yep.
Most likely it will in some aspect.
Right.
You know, you're juggling so many balls a day.
Yeah.
But you got to go to your staff. You got to depend on your staff. You got to back your staff. The staff you hire is everything.
Yeah.
If you've got good people around you, you will look good. If
That's
you
right.
have bad ones, you will not look good because they'll put you in a position to make you suffer. They'll tell you, I totally agree with you, then walk out the door and jump ship on you.
Yeah.
You know, and there are people like that. They're just human beings that you're dealing with. And you got to understand that, and you got to handle it the right way. Get them in, talk to them. If that doesn't work, move them out.
Yep. I tell you what, I learned a lot by just listening to you talk always. And I am so lucky that I've met you then, especially at that Saturday morning when you made me sit in front row by myself to listen to
you. You came in late.
I came in late. I have to admit, I came in late.
15, 20 minutes.
Well, I had a good reason.
Door, your book's falling out of your hand. And I said, come in here and sit down right up here in the front.
You did.
Yes, sir.
You did. You did. But I had a good reason. But you didn't.
You're a good man, Andrew.
Well, I appreciate you. Well, I tell you what, it's been awesome to just to be able to talk with you on a weekly or daily basis sometimes. I know that you've been there for me for many occasions, and I appreciate that very much. And I want to let you know that you have a special place in my heart. I appreciate it.
And you have one in mine. Not every professor or whatever the hell I was gets to handle people like you every day. You're a good man, and I'd like to see you get back in the superintendency.
Oh, no. I think I got enough gray hair now. And
you do. It has turned gray.
Yeah, and I'm approaching your hairstyle here pretty soon.
Yeah, that's right. None falls out. It goes.
Well, you're looking good. You're looking good. You look good. You sound
too.
Yeah, I appreciate
you saying that. Are you going to be teaching or anything here?
Well, you know, I'm busy right now and busy visiting superintendents, talking with, folks like you and others, and really enjoying that and enjoying my kids.
There you go. That's what it's all about.
Yep.
God bless you.
Lunch Duty is produced by David Yeager and me, Andrew Kim. We thank the Lates Development Studio and the Texas Behavioral Science and Policy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin for their support. Thank you for listening, and please join us for our next episode of Lunch Duty.